Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
This is primetime on Football Friday. 1080 The Fan.
We're going to ring that championship bell.
60 minutes. Let's open up the whole can of kick ass and kill them all. Let the paramedics sort them out. Ready?
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make the fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite show.
On 1080, The Fan.
All right, 506 on The Fan. A rap-a-thon today, although I've had some excellent football guests. Colin Wilson joined us earlier, Action Network. And Dave Bartu is here, College Football Matrix. He'll slide back in about 10 minutes, and we'll talk about some of these other coaching hires. But he brought up Chip Long, the recently, I don't know about fired, but departed Notre Dame offensive coordinator as the home run hire for Oregon's vacant offensive coordinator position. So we'll see if they go after Chip Long or if he's even mentioned. So he brought up some other names as well. If you want to go back and listen to any of that, you can, 1080thefan.com. Our podcasts are brought to you by Les Schwab. What we have coming up here is a segment with Dave at 5:15, Joey Harrington in studio 5:30 to 6. Among the topics with him, of course, winning the Rose Bowl, talk a little bit about Arroyo, and then I also want to get into Mike Vick and the comparisons of Mike Vick to Lamar Jackson, because Joey Harrington was the quarterback who stepped in for Mike Vick when he was arrested for dogfighting. That'll be in our final half hour, and then the club tonight. We have all kinds of good stuff. A grab bag of bull shark is what I call it for the club. But right now, the Hot 5 at 5.
Oh. Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5. Refreshed on The Fan by Frost Brewed Coors Light.
What, bud?
Oh, the dog.
Pete Lane Kiffin.
I got tickets for that Notre Dame game.
Bet the Jetta and the Bug on both of them, you know?
Oh, speaking of comings of Jesus and things like
blue
that.
Blue to 69.
You're an idiot, dude.
Ross is an idiot.
You're so cute, Jason.
Number five.
You gotta love the Dave Bartu montage when Dave Bartu's sitting right there. He just gave me a wink and a point. He loved it.
You're welcome for all that content, Isaac.
Yeah, no kidding. The other thing, too, I want to talk about in the club is that octopus bald eagle video. I don't know if you guys saw that, but holy crap. Super cool. Anyway, let's get to the Hot Five, shall we? Ex-NBA Commissioner David Stern suffered a brain hemorrhage yesterday at a restaurant. He had to be rushed to the hospital and had to have emergency surgery. Now, I'm a little worried because there is no update on his condition. There hasn't been all day.
That's not a good sign, I don't think.
Not a good sign. So hopefully he is recovering. We don't know. He served as commissioner from 1984 to 2014. And under his watch, the average player salary jumped from $250,000 a year to $5 million, which is a lot.
He's also a Teaneck, New Jersey native.
Oh, I didn't know
he
that.
He went to my high school, yeah.
David Stern went to your high school?
Yes.
Huh. You ever meet him?
No.
At a big Teaneck, New Jersey high school function?
No, I have not.
Did he ever come back for his reunion?
He might have, but he's a lot older than I am, so.
Giants have cut cornerback Janoris Jenkins after he tweeted the word, and I am going to say this, retard, when clapping back at a fan. Now, a fan tweeted the following at him that he said, how many of those stats contributed to any wins? And he went, hashtag none, hashtag irrelevant, as if those hashtags would start trending. I don't know why people do that. Anyway, Janoris replied, I can do my job. He explained that it's just slang that he uses back home, which wasn't good enough. Today he was cut. He was hurt and not practicing anyway. The upside for Jenkins is that he'll have more time to tweet dumb stuff. The Titans list running back Derrick Henry questionable against the Texans. He has not practiced all week. And the Niners expect defensive end Dee Ford to miss 4 weeks due to a hamstring injury. That means he will likely even miss the first week of the playoffs.
Number three.
Michigan wide receiver Tarik Black is in the NCAA transfer portal. Means he'll likely miss their bowl game against Alabama. Black was hurt much of his first two seasons. This past year was his best, but he only racked up 323 yards. Michigan was stacked at wide receiver. He is a former four-star guy and a top 100 guy. Elsewhere, Oregon running back Darian Felix has chosen his transfer destination. He is leaving the Ducks, and he will be taking his talents to South Florida. And I tease this by saying there is a Pac-12 school that has had 12 players enter the transfer portal since the end of the season, just since the 1st of December. Any guesses on who it is?
Oh.
And they had another one today.
God.
It's not a name you would know.
I don't.
Dave, do you know?
Dave
says no.
I don't know.
It's Stanford.
Oh.
Stanford. 12 players are leaving Stanford, which is interesting, and nobody really seems to understand why. But 12 players are leaving Stanford and entered their name into the transfer portal just since December 1st.
Number two.
Big five-star center Enfali Dante has joined the Oregon Ducks basketball team. He won't play for a while, but he will begin traveling with the team. Dane Altman says the hope is they'll have him ready in the next 3 or 4 weeks, possibly in time for the beginning of Pac-12 play. The Ducks are currently number 10, and they have a big game tomorrow. They are playing at number 5, Michigan. The Wolverines, interestingly enough, were in that battle for Atlantis where the Ducks played and lost to, Gonzaga and North Carolina. Well, the Wolverines beat both Gonzaga and North Carolina, so this should be an interesting matchup. The game tips tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. on CBS, but the Wolverines, since winning the battle for Atlantis, have lost 2 of 3, and they just got beat by Illinois the other night.
Number one.
And number one is it looks like Marcus Arroyo will be the offensive coordinator for the Oregon Ducks in the Rose Bowl, despite taking the UNLV job. He was introduced officially and formally in Las Vegas today. He said he hopes to be the offensive coordinator for the Ducks, and it looks like that is going to be the case. There is a recruiting dead period that begins in the middle of next week, so he could pull it off. We now know the terms of his contract as well at UNLV. He is getting a 5-year deal, and his starting salary will be $1.5 million per season. That is nearly double what he was making at Oregon. He was making about $825,000 at Oregon. So there's your Hot 5 at 5. It's refreshed by Coors Light. Enter to win tickets to a Blazers home game and a $250 gift card to the team store wherever you buy Coors Light. Coors Light! Made to chill. Let's get Bartu back in here. I wonder what he thinks of that Lane Kiffin hire down there at Ole Miss. And some other interesting names, not big names, that were hired as head coaches in the coaching carousel this year. So we'll get to that next. Joey Harrington in studio at 5:30 on The Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, 5:16 on The Fan. Joey Harrington in studio. Next segment, talk about the Ducks winning the Rose Bowl. Dave Bartu is here, College Football Matrix. Interestingly enough, we were just talking during the break about that Hot 5 at 5 story. You were surprised that it was, I think we were all surprised, that it was Stanford that is the school that has 12 kids in the transfer portal.
Stunned.
So, and why
Shocked.
Is that? Because they don't,
They
mean,
don't lose anybody.
Right, it's Stanford.
Ever. I mean, I did attrition numbers to try to see how it correlated with winning and losing. And Stanford for a decade. I mean, they nobody leaves. There's no attrition. That's actually like a detriment to Stanford is when they get a guy, even if he's not a good player, they never cut him loose. He never leaves or she, you know, it's probably the same thing with she
Whoa.
On all sports.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm talking
about
Stanford.
Well, yeah, because it's just a different... It's a different animal.
Who doesn't want a Stanford degree?
Right.
Right? You know?
So that makes you think there's something up at Stanford.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, if you just said there was five guys I mean, if you've
they've had 12 enter the transfer portal
if
since
you said Dave list Pac-12 most likely to suffer attrition this year.
Yeah,
Stanford would have been like number 13. You know, right. I mean, right. No way. And when you said that, I mean, it was like a head snap.
You
what?
Think Shaw is leaving?
Something's going on.
Shaw's going to the NFL,
right? I mean, this is smoke on the water here. I mean, something is really going on there. Either Shaw's leaving, or there is so much dissatisfaction in that program that guys are jumping ship.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, I know they had a down year. They were only 4-8, which is unusual.
That wouldn't do it, though.
No,
I mean,
it
that
wouldn't.
Wouldn't do it.
But Shaw's a good, like, Shaw hasn't changed. There's nothing, I mean, he's a good coach. Just a bad year. I don't know.
Now, just because
he's leaving.
Now, because they've entered the portal doesn't mean that they're leaving.
That's true.
Okay.
And some of them are not key players.
Right. Let's not get too far ahead of the skis. But even if they're not key players, you got to understand this doesn't happen at Stanford in the past. I mean, you know, the number 12 is, I mean, look at that, dude. That's 15% of the roster.
Yeah.
I bet you they haven't lost 12 guys in the last 12 years.
Right. Crazy.
Wild.
David Shaw will be the next head coach
at blank
of, let's see, I'm trying to think. Well, he's a big NFL, maybe the Cowboys. Yeah, he's not going to be the coach of the Cowboys. But who needs a coach?
Dude, my buddy Dale is screaming at you, shut up. No, not there.
Okay, what were we? Oh, so the coaching carousel in college.
Mm-hmm.
Lane Kiffin is probably the biggest. This is a weird year because of the jobs that were open, there weren't too many major jobs, just the Florida State. Mm-hmm. And it didn't feel like that there were really big names. I mean, Urban Meyer's name was out there, but he didn't go anywhere, you know? So it kind of felt like most of the jobs. Well, actually, I don't think they're all filled. I think Boston College still needs a coach.
There's still a lot out there. And you got to remember, when somebody fills one, that usually means there's another one open, unless somebody made a crazy decision. Unless you're Arkansas and you hire an offensive line coach with no play calling.
Well,
or
that's
head
what
coach
I'm saying.
Experience.
Like if you, so there were three SEC jobs open: Ole Miss, Arkansas, Missouri, and two of the three. It's like who? It kind of felt like, wait, who did they hire this year? It was kind of one of those years. But Missouri hired the Drinkwitz guy from App State, who he only had 1 year there, but I guess he's good.
He had 1 year there. You got to remember who he succeeded to. He succeeded Scott Satterfield,
who's at Louisville.
But Scott Satterfield was number one on our board in terms of the group of five head coaches for the last 3 years. This guy's a rock star.
Like
okay?
him. Huh? Okay.
A lot. So if you're at, let's say, Appalachian State for 4 or 5 years and you develop a great culture and you are a great coach and you bring in great coaches, when you leave, guess what? You leave behind a bunch of really great coached kids. So with Drinkwitz, you're talking about a 13-game schedule. You're hoping a guy that in 13 games is actually didn't feast off of Satterfield's leftovers, that he actually elevated it. So I think for Missouri, I think this is a really big risk. The guy's good at offense, but I think this is a really big risk to take a guy out of Appalachian State after one season and dump him into the SEC East.
By the way, the texters are maybe onto something here. I was blanking on who the other teams that needed coaches in the NFL. Shaw is an NFL guy. And I brought the Cowboys. He's not going to go to the Cowboys, but they brought up Washington, the Redskins, which is a possibility. But what about Carolina? I could totally see David Shaw being the new coach at Carolina.
Oh, you mean like with Christian McCaffrey?
Yep.
Ooh,
there you go.
Scandalous.
That is scandalous. And yet,
and David Shaw has said every single time you guys have asked him, I say no to every NFL head coaching job.
Yep, he has said that. We've had him on multiple times. And
yeah, but have you asked him that this week?
Exactly.
Should we call him? Let's call him.
Exactly. Hey. Okay. Well, let's see. Lane Kiffin, good hire?
Middle of the road. Look, I don't like the hire from a coaching standpoint.
You've said it before on our show.
He's basically minus two games a year.
Hate Lane Kiffin.
If you expect Ole Miss to be 6-6, he'll be 4-8 if he follows his career pattern. But he's actually going to have a good coaching triangle: the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. He's probably going to retain Mike McIntyre, who is an excellent defensive coordinator.
Mm.
The Colorado guy.
He's there?
Yeah, he's there, and he is good. He is really good. And he Kiffin also brought in the offensive coordinator from Central Florida to assist him with player development and quarterback development. Overall, the hire, I'm not inspired by it because his career pattern doesn't show the ability to win above talent. So, you know, he's going to recruit great. Mississippi's going to be right back into the top 20 of recruiting.
So he's like Taggart.
No, Taggart couldn't do anything. Taggart sucks.
He can recruit.
Dude, I'm going to punch you in the suck hole. He couldn't do anything.
Wait a minute. You don't think Taggart could recruit?
He had one good year, and that was at Oregon. If you look at his years.
Well, how many good years has Lane Kiffin had? Don't punch
me. You look at I'm not even going back to Taggart. Okay. He got hired. Speaking of which, somebody hired him. Florida Atlantic replaced Lane Kiffin
with Willie Taggart.
Okay.
There's my point.
So we know that Florida Atlantic is going to underperform their schedule by 12 games over the next 4 years. If they don't fire him, their recruiting is going to drop or stagnate. And Florida Atlantic will, I'll even put a little sticky note right here next to Cam's notes right here. Florida Atlantic will lead the FBS in penalties once in the next 3 years.
All right, fine. So they're not the same.
They aren't. Lane Kiffin's actually a good recruiter.
Yeah. Taggart isn't?
And Taggart is not as good a recruiter as Lane Kiffin.
Okay.
Taggart is a worse head coach than Lane Kiffin. They're both not very good, but Taggart is far worse than Lane Kiffin.
Okay, rank the coaches in the Pac-12 based on what your numbers.
Oh, can you believe?
I mean, you don't have to rank them all.
I still can't believe we lost Chris Peterson.
The top three. Yeah.
I'm still in shock. I don't believe it. I really don't. It's like Arkansas hired Sam Pittman. What? No, that's not happening. It's like a bad dream. And then what's funny is Washington fans like, well, shoot,
next man up,
we won't skip a beat. Dude, you just lost one of the best college football's coaches of the last two decades, and you're not going to skip a beat. And you brought in an offensive guy who's never been an elite defense, you know, a non-offensive guy who's never been an elite defensive play caller in his life.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. So
yeah, that was a shocker.
Yeah,
for sure.
From a head coach standpoint,
and Cristobal, like, is he the best coach in the Pac-12?
I think Kyle Whittingham is.
You think Whittingham's better than Cristobal?
Yeah. I mean, if we're lining up and we're taking guys, for coaching, okay, but it's not all coaching. Cristobal right now is the best recruiter in the Pac-12. You know, now if you had a combination of Cristobal's recruiting and Whittingham's coaching, you know, now I think you're really onto something. I think the third guy you got to mention is Mike Leach.
Awesome.
Okay.
He's awesome.
Yeah. I think you got to mention Mike Leach. And I think right now, I think that's maybe one of the detriments though of the Pac-12 is
they really
don't have a lot of good coaching. I like Will Cox at Cal.
Yep.
I think he's done a good job there. His defensive coordinator is very good. Oregon State, Jonathan Smith has done a very good job in the last 24 months. I don't know why he wasn't mentioned for Pac-12. In fact, didn't Whittingham get Pac-12 coach of the year?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
What a lot of horse crap that is.
That is.
Seriously, it should have been Oregon or Oregon State.
Cristobal or Smith.
I mean, if I had a vote, it would have been Oregon or Oregon State.
Did they vote for that before the Pac-12 title game?
Who cares? I mean, seriously, who cares? I mean, Utah beat one team that recruited in the top 25 this year. He was plus one coach effect. Washington.
Yeah, okay.
Cristobal was plus two games. Smith was plus three. The best coaching in the Pac-12 was here in this state.
Cristobal was plus two. They beat
USC.
Washington on the road.
Washington and USC on the road. USC, yeah.
Right.
I heard USC's 12th in recruiting in the Pac-12.
Oh.
Is that true?
I don't know
what
it is.
Yeah, the list I saw today was they were like 80th in the country.
God.
You're seeing Rome crumble before your eyes.
Right.
It is bad. I mean, no.
Well, Helton went 8-4. Look,
and they kept him around for another year.
Inexplicably, right? Yeah. I mean, you just can't. Oh, my God. I mean, USC last year, they went through the sanctions with Lane Kiffin. The worst class he pulled was 13. Helton right now is on pace. Last year, USC had their worst recruiting class by grade, worst recruiting class this century, and they are the number one recruiter this century going into last year. They had their worst class. They're on pace for an even worse class this year.
Wow.
It is just absolutely crumbling down at USC. And to me, it hurts the Pac-12. I mean, if you're a Pac-12 fan, if you believe that, hey, we want the Pac-12 to have national notoriety, the best way to do it is your three best recruiters in every division are on top. So when it comes to the Pac-12, you want Utah, UCLA, and USC on top. Nowhere close to that. Oregon, Stanford, Washington. Nowhere close to that. You know, only Utah and Oregon are holding this thing up,
yep.
And they can't do it by themselves.
Interesting. All right, so we got a couple minutes left. Give me a coach nationally that the Matrix, your numbers, your tools spit out that is just tremendous, that nobody talks about.
Let's go back to, since we're talking about new hires, let's go with Florida State. Okay, they brought in Mike Norvell.
Yeah, you like that guy?
I like he was number one on our board for the G5s. Okay. He has been top 10 in scoring efficiency as a play caller for the last 3 years for Memphis. He's gotten better at hiring a DC. His last guy he brought in, who may or may not have been recommended to him, the DC at Memphis, Adam, who is now the DC at Florida State. This was a really good hire in terms of potential, but I was kind of surprised they weren't looking at Power 5 guys. All right, because this is a national championship level program. It can recruit in the top 10. It can produce a national title there. I don't know if Norvell's going to do that, but I think the guys they should have been looking at that I was expecting to hear hired, Satterfield would have been one of the guys I looked at. I think that's a name that he took a team from 2-10 2 years ago under Petrino. Last year they were 7-5, and they were competitive even in their losses. Jeff Brohm. Don't hear from him much. He's at Purdue.
He had kind of a down year.
He did have kind of a down year, but he lost his quarterback in week one. He lost 13 starters. And when you're the worst recruiter, you're not going to get that quickly. But he is working on his second consecutive top 25 class. This is a program that averages classes in the 60s.
Right.
And they are in the weakest talented division, the Big Ten West, with Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota. He's working on a second consecutive top 25 class. He is a great recruiter. He is a great quarterback coach. He has been efficient. He has won everywhere he's gone. Everybody's been elevated. I thought they should have hired Jeff Brohm before Willie Taggart. That was my guy back then. So Taggart
at Oregon?
No.
Or you're talking Florida State?
Florida State. Yeah. Instead of hiring Taggart, they should have brought Jeff Brohm in. I think he's a national championship level coach.
Interesting to hear about his recruiting classes. Yeah, give it a couple of years, man.
You say Purdue and you go, oh, yeah. When's the Big Ten?
Joe Tiller.
Oh, yeah, when's it? Drew Brees. Right? Yeah. Oh, Joe Tiller was so ruddy.
Gene Katie. Okay, so then recruiting rankings. Is Oregon State picking up steam? Are they?
I haven't looked at it lately. I didn't see their name I glanced at the top 50-ish.
Do they even break the top 50 on average?
They used to. They were in the high 30s, mid 30s.
With Riley.
When they were really rolling, it was mid 30s to low 40s. So I don't know where they're at right now. I would expect that they're probably in the 50s somewhere.
So this was from earlier today. It was the current Pac-12 recruiting class rank on 24/7. Oregon State was 46 nationally.
Solid.
That's better.
Okay.
USC was 80th.
God. And Oregon's like...
Washington is 15. Oregon is 16.
Okay.
Stanford 20, although that might be changing with a bunch of these guys leaving. UCLA 28. Colorado, Cal in the 30s.
UCLA.
It's not going to work, is it?
I don't know. Tell me.
It's not going to work.
Also, Utah 79.
Wow.
Not that they always recruit well.
They're late.
But it's early.
Well, it's not early. That's the thing. It's national signing days in
next
2 weeks. You're going to have.
Well, the early signing day is next week.
Stop saying that. It's not the early signing day. Like 90% of the guys are off the board.
You're so angry, but Dave.
That's what it's called, Dave.
It is. Well, stop calling it that because it's stupid. It is national signing day. 90% of the guys are gone after that day.
Okay. Well, in Oregon's top 15, you said?
Recruiter? Oregon is 16th right now.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, but I mean, USC and outside the top, USC outside the top 25 is a travesty. UCLA outside the top 25, they are just not getting it done in LA, and I just don't get it.
Weird. David, it was great to see you. I love you.
Got to make room for Joey now.
You're a very good guest. But yes, there is a much more handsome guest coming in right behind you, so I'm sorry.
Much,
gotta go.
Much more handsome, much taller.
Much taller. Joey Harrington in studio next. Again, real quick, I want to plug your website that you're going to throw all this info onto.
Oh, all the subscription site. It's patreon.com/CFB Matrix. And if you follow me on Twitter or if you're on Twitter, just go find CFB Matrix. I'll link it there. It's all going up this evening. You'll be able to look at everybody I talked about, everybody I didn't talk about that's on the list, and that spreadsheet in terms of running and passing by down and distance.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's going to be humongous.
Check that out. Thank you to Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix, our dear friend, our old friend.
P1.
He mentioned, yeah, you are P1. You listen when you're in the truck delivering hemp. He mentioned, if you're just tuning in, you don't want to go back and listen, or you missed it, Oregon OC candidates. He really likes Chip Long, the guy who just left Notre Dame.
No brainer.
All right, so Joe Harrington in studio coming up next. But first, Mike with SportsCenter.
Rangers, you know you're the mastermind.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
In studio every Friday, 5:30. But this, I regret to inform our listeners, is one of the final ones. No, this is the final one for 2019. Jay Joseph Harrington.
Well, I appreciate the formality, but you're not just informing the listeners, you're informing me. I didn't realize that I didn't get to come in the next couple weeks.
You can come, but no one will be here.
It's tempting. Could I host the show?
You can. I tell you what, you come through here during the holidays, you can probably jump on all six stations.
No,
there's
really?
No one here. Just go in, crack a mic, see what happens. Could be fun.
Story time with Joey on every station for Intercom.
On 99.5 The Wolf.
Yeah.
Well, sir, Pac-12 champs, man.
Didn't see that coming.
No. And you know what, man? When you're built the way Oregon is, we've talked about this all season on the line of scrimmage. They hadn't been playing well.
Oh, my God.
You were worried about them. The worry meter was at peak levels.
Oh, it was all-time high.
But when you're built like that from the inside out, you got a shot no matter who you're playing, no matter when you're playing, no matter how you're playing.
Okay, now let me qualify this. We saw, or I saw, or whatever, you know, when we're talking about this, we saw this coming based on the trajectory of their season, you know, from Colorado on, prior to the Arizona State game, right? As the season was going on, we were all sitting there saying, all right, this is playoff. They're going to beat Utah. This is where they're going to end up. And then they, you know, had a brain fart against Arizona State and then looked really sluggish against Oregon State. And we were all thinking like, oh man, like, what happened? And then they ended up in the exact same spot. It was, you know, if you're looking at that, the graph, the x-axis and the y-axis and the diagonal trend up, and then all of a sudden there was just like a stock market crash, and then boop, they ended up, you know, they shot right back up and ended up in the same spot that we thought they were going to be at the beginning. But I don't think that anybody saw that type of performance top to bottom.
The way they punched him in the mouth.
Oh my God.
And Utah had been playing so well.
So well.
Like that's just a satisfying win. I'm sure as a player, there are some wins that are far more satisfying than other wins.
Yes.
I don't know. What was your most satisfying win in college?
Satisfying?
Yeah, like the one where you're like, yeah. It was probably the Fiesta Bowl.
Was probably the most satisfying. I mean, they were definitely more exciting. Like that's, we had all sorts of, you know, last minute comeback win in the fourth quarter stuff, but that Fiesta Bowl was probably the most satisfying.
So 10-2.
Yeah. Rose Bowl. Conference champs.
11-2. Pac-12 champs. But the Auburn loss, the inexplicable Arizona State loss.
Are we going to go there?
No. No, I'm not, actually. I just, like, would you still play the Auburn game? Was the only road I was going down.
Okay, cool. We can go down
because
that road.
Because they've had, I would tell you this, and I think the listeners would agree. I've gone out of my way to make sure not to seem like it was a failure.
Yeah, to poo-poo the Rose Bowl.
Yeah,
to talk down on the fact that they just won the conference championship.
We've got to be careful to do that because this was sensational.
Absolutely.
There was a moment in there where it was really
very
disappointing,
true.
But I just, in hindsight, it's like the Arizona State game, you said it all year, the Arizona State game, that's going to happen. It's coming. You know it's coming. You just got to fight it off and hopefully you win. Well, they didn't. So that happened. Right. That one I just don't think you can avoid. The Auburn game is interesting because you can go back and you can say, well, they should have scheduled a cupcake like Washington did the year they made the college football playoff. Or you could say, no, you play Auburn. You play those games.
You just got to hold on and win it.
Agreed. That's where I go. Because I don't say you don't schedule Auburn. I say you just need to buck up and beat Arizona State, right? Because if they did win out, which we had all expected them to do, that Auburn game would have been the difference maker, right? If we're comparing, right, you're comparing a loss of Georgia against South Carolina, you know, a crummy South Carolina team, or you're comparing a loss of Oregon against a good Auburn team, right? I mean, I will never back away from playing those early season games because, one, it tells your team anyone, anywhere, anytime. Two, it sets your strength of schedule up, which, you know, I know there's no formula for it anymore, but it does play into the mind of the committee. And three, it's a great recruiting tool, right? It's a chance to go down to Texas and play Auburn and do it in front of the recruits that you are trying to get, you know, to get eyeballs. So I would never second guess that. What I will say is that you got to beat Arizona State. And that's the difference. And it's interesting. You were sitting there saying which one loss team is going to get into the playoff? Which one loss team? You know, how are we going to decide between all these one loss teams? How many one loss teams were there?
There ended up being what, one?
One. Three undefeateds and one one loss team.
That's why it's so
because
futile.
That's what happens in November in college. Yeah. That happens every year. So it's not change your schedule so you don't have to play Auburn. It's stay focused, know that those bumps are going to come, be prepared for that, and truly prove that you are one of the best teams in college football. Because had you beaten Arizona State, that Auburn game wouldn't have mattered. Oregon would have gone over Oklahoma. If an Oregon team is going to be head-to-head with an Oklahoma team with one loss, Oregon is going to go. That's how it would have worked. And so that Auburn game would have done nothing, to, you know, changing that Auburn game, or you didn't need to. You didn't need to change the Auburn game to get into it.
Well, you could say if you lost Arizona State, if you hadn't lost Auburn, you lose to Arizona State, you're probably still going. So it works both ways. I mean, they couldn't
yes
lose
and no.
one
yes
of
and
those
no.
games.
I would say that there would be more debate between Oklahoma and Oregon, yeah. and in a case where Oklahoma may win. But if you're debating who had the better loss between Oklahoma and Oregon right now, it would have been Oregon.
I would think, too, playing a game like Auburn right out of the gate, one, focuses your team, gets you ready, like you, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to whomever, Tennessee State or whatever. And two, I think that that's just a huge game I think this of college basketball, where I don't understand, the season's so long, and the tournament's so tough, and you're going to run into tough teams in the tournament if you just make the tournament, that you should play the toughest possible non-conference schedule you can in college basketball to prepare you for the tournament. That's if you're in Oregon, if you're a Kansas, a Kentucky.
Right.
And I think Oregon in football is at the level of, hey, you play these games. You play these games so that your team knows what it's like to play against the best teams. It prepares you to go through the tough Power Five conference season.
Absolutely. You play one of those games and you take two paydays. That's how it works. And anybody who says otherwise, I don't want to say they're scared, but they're trying to take the easy way into it, right? They're trying to find a loophole. They're trying to find, you know, some way to back their way into, to hedge their bets. Well, in the event that they lose a game during conference, then they can fall back. Well, just don't lose. Just be better than everybody.
Joey Harrington in studio every Friday, courtesy BMW Portland. So before we get into it, I want to ask you about Arroyo. And then I also want to talk to you about, you were in Atlanta with Mike Vick.
I was.
And I'd like to talk to you about that in terms of what Lamar Jackson is doing. But before we get to that, what is your assessment of where the Oregon program is moving forward? Like what are realistic expectations as they hit the recruiting trail here and pack up for another season? Because that's a lot of fans, the reason I ask is I want Joey Harrington to tell the audience, here's what's realistic. You're a level-headed guy. You're inside the program. You know what's going on. A lot of fans, I feel like, were spoiled by the Chip Kelly years.
Mm-hmm.
And then this, you know, sniffing around a college football playoff. I feel like expectations, and rightly so, should be very high.
Right.
But what's realistic coming from you?
You want me to answer this right now, or is this a tease coming back from the break?
Let's do this, and then when we come back, we'll talk about Arroyo.
Got it. Okay, if I'm looking at this objectively, I see losing Justin Herbert. I see losing Troy Dye. Right, I see losing key pieces on both sides of the ball. I see losing four offensive linemen, a significant rebuilding operation that is going to be at hand. Now, that being said, you've got the Outland Trophy winner and, you know, potentially the... did Orlando Pace win the Heisman? No, he didn't.
No.
Let's say Penei Sewell is going to be the first Heisman winning offensive lineman. Okay. No, you have building blocks in place. Cristobal and his staff have done an incredible job of recruiting. That has been one of their strong points. And you know, the criticism for Mario has been game management, team management. You know, I think he's done a good job of alleviating some of that and showing that, you know, through his experience now that he can make the right, you know, the good decisions. I would say next year, I've got question marks. I want to see who's going to be quarterback. I want to see how Shuck's going to do. I want to see what the offensive line is going to look like. I want to see, there are things, but those are no different than any other team in any other year, right? So I think it's realistic to, whereas this year you said with Justin, we have a chance to be in the college football playoff. I think it's realistic to be in the discussion of a conference championship every season. Now, does that mean that you're running the table to win a conference championship? No, we were, 11 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 11 and 2. Yeah, it always throws me off because there's 12 games, there's a conference champion. They play too much. Anyway, you know, you can lose a couple games and still win the conference championship. That is a realistic point every single year. And in those years where you do have the Justin Herberts, the Marcus Mariotas, the LaMichael James, you know, in those years where you do have that collection of special talent, which Coach Cristobal has shown he's been able to deliver on, then you can set those goals of, hey, this, or not even set the goals because the team is always setting that goal. But you can, as a fan, bring yourself to say, yeah, this could be the year. Right, this could be a realistic year where we could make a run at it. But there's no reason that you can't think that they can have at least be in the competition for the conference championship every year.
Agreed. When we come back, Marcus Arroyo is leaving. What's next for the Oregon offense? We'll get to that with Joey, and then we'll talk about his days in Atlanta with Mike Vick. Joey Harrington in studio with us here on 1080 The Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Okay, we're back with Joey Harrington. I wanted to touch on Marcus Arroyo, who has taken the UNLV job, before we get into some NFL stuff with you, Joey. This is another one where it's like, it's kind of like the season where it's like, man, that was a really good season. We shouldn't, you know, kick this guy on the way out. He was good. Top 20 offense. But at the same time, all season we sat here on Fridays and talked about, especially after Auburn, wish he would have opened it up a little bit more or trusted Herbert a little bit more, or the offense was vanilla at times or predictable at times.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you before I forget what I was going to say. And you said all season on Fridays we talked about this.
Much of the season.
We talked about it for the first 5 weeks. And then once he hit Colorado, things changed.
The Washington game, I thought, well, you're right.
That was a defensive brain fart. That was, you know, was Washington, the Washington game, because they put up 30, what, they won 38, 34, 35.
No, what I was saying was I think the Washington game was the one where we all came back here that next Friday and said, man, Royo had a damn good
got
game.
Got it. Was Washington before Colorado?
Don't remember.
It was all in the same, but I remember, for some reason, I remember Colorado and I think that was the week before Washington. But yeah, you're right. That first half of the season, and it was piggybacked on last year's, constructive criticism, but there was a turning point for Marcus this year. And I think we all saw it.
Yeah.
It's tough because when you're trying to build a tough, hard-nosed, run-first, win-in-the-trenches type of program, but you've got arguably the best quarterback in the country. How do you find that balance?
Yeah, some people would suggest that it was hard for Arroyo because Cristobal wanted to play that style. You know, I don't know how much that affected Arroyo's play calling or his offense, but the guy did a good job. But it's kind of exciting to see Mario Cristobal get to go around now, and the Ducks can pay. They pay assistants. They pay Jim Leavitt, I think, at one point, Jimbo. Well,
it was 1.2 or something like
the
that.
Highest, wasn't yeah. he one of the highest paid guys? Yeah. So, and I think that's a big part of it. If you couldn't pay, I'd be worried. But you can pay. It's exciting to see what could be next with the Oregon offense yep. with a fresh set of eyes.
And I don't think it's kicking a guy on the way out to simply say that you're excited of what excited to see what comes next.
Right.
I don't even know where to begin. Like where do you go? Because I'm curious to see where Mario goes, because you're right in that I'm sure that there was a little bit of, I don't want to call it tension between Arroyo and Cristobal, but Marcus knowing that he's got the best quarterback in the country, and but also knowing that his head coach wants to establish a certain type of culture. I'm curious to see, you know, because you're not going to get nor is Mario going to go out and try and find a Mike Leach, you know, air raid type of guy. That's not going to be the type of coach that he's going to bring in. But I'm curious to see. And I don't even have suggestions. I mean, that's the, you know, racking my brain of trying to think.
Yeah, I think it's a total wild card, like who he's going to pick. Yeah. And you just got to trust them. I mean,
because there's so many schools that have now gone that direction that, yes. you know, I'm thinking, okay, well, Oklahoma chucks it all over the place. And, you know, and even, you know, Alabama, they're chucking it all over the place. You know, you go That's all right. through the, I mean, there has definitely been a transition of college football. And I don't think that Cristobal is the David Shaw, Jim Harbaugh type of, you know, where they were, where everybody was, you know, spreading it out and going fast. They went big and multiple tight ends and pounded it down your throat to win a couple conference championships at Stanford. I don't think Mario's going fully that direction, but I think that there is going to be a balance for the guy that he's looking for.
Yeah, I just, the only thing as a fan outside looking in that I would say is, you just mentioned Alabama, how they used to just be ground and pound, just rely on defense.
LSU
has totally opened it up. Oklahoma, I swear to God, runs for 200 yards and throws for 200 yards every week. It's unbelievable what Lincoln Riley has done. So it's possible. I don't know who that guy is.
But see, here's the thing that people don't understand. And I don't say don't understand, but don't factor into the equation. Sure, Oklahoma's running for 200 and throwing for 300, but how many points are they giving up, right? During those Chip Kelly days, when we were putting up 50 points a game, we were giving up 38, 39, 40. I mean, we were against the good teams, right? Now, I'm not talking about the Cals when you win 55-10, but it puts a stress on your defense. And so if Cristobal is thinking that I want to be a defensive-minded team, your offensive play calling has a direct effect on how your defense performs. And so you have to be very careful when you say, well, God, look at Oklahoma, who's throwing for two or throwing for three and running for two every game. What are they doing on defense? What kind of toll is that having on their defense?
And they have a hell of a defensive coordinator. They hired Alex Grinch. And it's funny you say that, because Alabama and LSU, it's like they're known for their defense, and now their offenses are
exactly
wide open.
What happened
and their
to
defenses.
What happened to LSU once Joe Burrow started going crazy?
Yeah,
LSU's now exactly. Their so they used slipped. To win games 14-9, and now they're scoring 40, but they're giving up 28.
So it's about fit with Avalos, fit with the culture. What is the key from a guy who has played to the offensive coordinator quarterback relationship? What are the key elements of that?
Trust, you know, I remember when Coach Tedford came in and I was a redshirt freshman, there was a certain amount of, you know, guys get used to, they get comfortable. They get used to the things that they do, their routine, what they're taught. When you're trying to teach new concepts and a new way of doing things, there's got to be a certain level of trust. And conversely, I remember when Tedford came in, he was a yeller and a screamer and a, you know, in your face, like fly off the handle kind of guy. And I said to him, I said, Coach, look, I get it. I threw a pick. I know it. I screwed up, you know, but by you having that type of over the top reaction, it doesn't help anything, right? I mean, you know, fine, you're venting, you're getting your frustration, but, you know, cool, let's move on. Like, you know, let's fix the problem instead of dwelling on it. And he was able to adapt and say, okay, that's not necessarily comfortable for me, but for the success of my quarterback, I'm willing to do that. And so there was a give and take, right? I think for a great quarterback offensive coordinator relationship, there has to be a willingness to put something to be a little bit uncomfortable, right? For the player to trust that the coordinator has his best interest in mind and isn't just using this as a stepping stone for his job, to build that trust, and for a coordinator to say, all right, this, you know, let's find something. I'm not going to come in and shove something down their throat. I'm going to look at who I have and tailor what I do to them.
You mentioned Tedford. Last week we talked about Chris Peterson stepping down, and I swear to God, it was
that afternoon.
That afternoon.
Yep.
That Tedford then just walked away. Is he wired? I mean, it doesn't sound like it, but is he wired the same way as Peterson? I mean, were you surprised by that?
I wasn't surprised because I know how Jeff operates, and he is a redliner. He is a guy who pushes it. He burns the candle on both ends, and he had some pretty significant health issues because he always talked, you know, he would tell me, hey, you know, I had the Giants reached out and offered me the offensive coordinator position and turned it down. And he had all sorts of people from the NFL coming to him while he was still in college. And he turned those things down because he loved the college game. But at some point he wanted to make the jump, and he jumped to Tampa after he was at Cal and had taken some time off. And he got sick. I mean, he was having significant health problems. So I understand where he's coming from on this. And he's learned to, you know, to take care of his health first. And I think that's a situation here.
Joey Harrington in studio. Final line of questioning I was curious to get your thoughts on, because Lamar Jackson last night, the guy's going to win MVP. How similar is what he's doing to what you witnessed with Mike Vick in Atlanta?
Mike was now let's go ahead and put the asterisk on there, you know, with everything that happened with the dogfighting, and I'm not talking about, you know, all of that stuff. I will say that at his core, Mike was a good guy and made some really crummy decisions. But as a football player, I've never seen anybody like him. Never. I mean, he would come out and without warming up we were playing catch warming up. I'd have to bring a receiver in to catch for me because I couldn't. It was lightning. I mean, he could truly throw, the phrase throw it through a brick wall came from Mike Vick. I mean, that's what he was like. What was so incredible though, is that he could be at full speed getting out on the edge and come to a complete stop, and then at that point choose to throw the ball or cut the other direction, right? Where most guys didn't have the body. If they had the body control to stop their momentum and cut, there's no way they could get their body in a position to make an accurate throw, which Mike could do because of his arm strength. What Lamar has been able to do, I will say that in terms of running wise, they're really similar. What Jackson has done through the air is more consistent than what Mike did through the air. And that's the difference, is he has become such a pot. And maybe it's a great relationship between quarterback and coordinator and finding things that work for him and finding ways for him to be successful as opposed to trying to, you know, so many guys when we were playing, were just trying to, you fit him into that mold. Like, here's the offense, fit into it. And at times that didn't work for Vic, but Lamar Jackson is a more efficient, more effective passer than Mike Vick is right now. And that's the difference, because he runs like Mike. I mean, it's video game type stuff. But then you throw on the fact that he's one of the most accurate passers and most productive passers in the NFL right now. Like, that just takes it to a whole nother level.
What was all the dogfighting stuff like? Were you able to remove yourself from all of that, or were you right in it, being right there when all that went down?
I was there. I mean, I was.
What was it like dealing with all that stuff?
Mike was I don't want to say so far above everybody else, right? I mean, he was the face of the NFL. He was Lamar Jackson. He was, you know, the guy who was just an absolute freak. And he's the kind of guy that for his entire life, nobody had ever said no. He had always been so good, and he's always been so much better than everybody else that people just acquiesced. And it created this situation. And I remember talking to Mike. I was like, I said, look, I was new that year and I was his backup. And I said, I'm not in any way trying to get into your business here. And I don't want to, I'm not trying to pry here, but I need to know how you want me to respond, because I'm being asked these questions now by the reporters and I'm not sure how to answer. Like, you know, I need you to give me some information or let me in to what you're thinking so that I can answer these questions in a way that is respectful for me, but is also respectful for you. And I'll never forget. He said, it's all right. They got nothing. You know, it's like, it's not a big deal. And so I just kind of, okay, well, I'll just kind of roll with it. And then I'll never forget the call that I got, you know, from Bill Musgrave was our quarterback coach. And he said, well, you ready to go? It was middle of July. And he said, early July, excuse me. He said, you ready to go? I said, well, yeah, you know, of course I'm ready. I'll be there in a couple of weeks. He said, no, turn on the TV. I was like, what do you mean? I clicked it on and Mike's being taken away in handcuffs. And he said, are you ready to go? It's like, well, I am now.
And you had a good stable of receivers there, right?
We had an interesting developmental. We had Roddy White, who was just learning how to become a good NFL receiver. We had Joe Horn, who was in his last year of being an NFL receiver. And we have Michael Jenkins, big tall guy from Ohio State. So yeah, I mean, we did have a good group of guys there.
And I know you were ready to go. Like, this was, I imagine you at that time, it was like, this, yes, I got another shot here. I mean, you're not happy that Vic, he kind of deserved it. I mean,
absolutely deserved it. Let's not beat around the bush here. He absolutely deserved it. What I will say is, in talking with him afterwards and being around people who, and talking with people who were around him afterwards, he was a changed man. He was a remorseful person who, and it's such a childish thing to say, but who learned his lesson. Mm-hmm. But he was a different person after that. And I absolutely respect everything he did to resurrect his career and take responsibility for what he did. But what he did was horrible.
So it's not like he got hurt. You got your opportunity. What happened that year? Was that Bobby Petrino?
What happened? We don't have time for this. We don't have time for this year.
That'll start story time.
Because
I don't remember. I just don't remember that season.
You don't remember that season because Bobby Petrino left halfway through.
Was it halfway?
It was about week 12.
I do remember that.
It was right after the end of the college football season because we had just finished playing a game and he came into the locker room and we got our butts kicked. And he said, every single one of you needs to go home, look at yourself in the mirror and decide what you can do to help this organization get better. He turned around and he walked out the door, and the next time we saw him, he was on ESPN doing Pig Suey in Arkansas.
Wow.
Never showed up.
Wow. Okay. Well, we can. Well,
that's multiple episodes on story time.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, it was a great, great season. We always appreciate you coming in every Friday. I know our listeners love it. We get a lot of great feedback about you jumping on here. So we appreciate you do it.
Going anywhere.
Have a great holiday.
I'm not going. I'm coming back.
Well, it sounds like.
Are you not coming back?
I'll be back, I think. But I'm just saying, like, it sounds like for listeners, if you want to tune in, like, on the Friday after Christmas, Joey might be on, like...
But I'll be back in January.
Every channel on the station.
Oh, yeah.
Hosting a show.
Yeah, they're like the country station and the, you know, and the pop station.
Yeah,
and,
well, I think after the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
You think they're going to win the Rose Bowl?
I do. Where they played against Utah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think after the Rose Bowl, we'll reconvene, and we appreciate you. Have a good holiday.
You as well.
Joey Harrington is courtesy of BMW of Portland, Portland's only BMW dealer where relationships matter. BMWPortland.com. Let's club next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.